You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. With more than 30 weekly podcasts, HRN has something for every food and drink lover. Learn more at heritageradionetwork.org.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections. Join them in the Ivy League of cheese education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock and roll, Lord. Knows that country music's gonna save your soul. The devil runs his groove in them rhythm and blues that send. It's gonna get you some in the end.
Welcome back to The Speakeasy. I'm Damon Bolte.
And I'm Greg Benson.
And Souther is... who knows? He's probably on like SpaceX by this point, like opening a bar on the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard about that.
The guy's always up to something. Yeah.
Amory Amargo Lunar.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. Coming to the Sea of Tranquility in fall of 2023.
How does he do it? How does he do it?
I don't know. Actually, I do know. It's just that I think he's just very tired a lot of the time.
Yeah. That must be it. Yeah. I mean, I was just thinking this morning about how he wrote his first book, or maybe all of his books, on his iPhone. He doesn't own a computer. This guy wrote his entire book.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, well, he's finally accepted that the computer of Natalie's that he's been using to do the podcast for, I guess, since the pandemic, he's finally accepted that that's his computer because she got tired of loaning it to him and it's an old busted up machine. So she just got a nice new one. So I suppose he now finally, he still hasn't purchased a computer. This is basically, you know, one step above finding a laptop in a dumpster and taking it home. But he does own a laptop now. So good for him. Good for our colleague.
It's good, but also it kind of takes some of the charm out of it for me personally.
It's true. Well, I'm sure he still does most of his writing on his iPhone. We'll have to ask him when he's back from his lunar voyage.
I'm sure if he had it his way, it would just be like a stack of bar naps. With a bunch of scribbles on, you know. That's how I roll, man.
Yeah, just kind of like, yeah, like a real like Jack Kerouac scroll, just kind of like turning in all these like, you know, waterlogged, just, you know, naps from like various different bars and just be like, here you go, here's the manuscript.
It would be great if you just like printed that, you know, like don't take the notes and type them out. Just like actually just like take photos of all the bar napkins and just make a book out of that.
Yeah, or if the book is just like, it's like the various chapters are stapled together, napkins, and then the whole thing is just held together by like one of those big alligator clips. Yeah, I'd buy it.
Yeah, I would totally.
I'd go to the Strand and buy that. Get him to sign it for me.
I get some inspiration for that, and you know, we can talk about that when we do the Speakeasy book. Actually, why haven't we done a Speakeasy book?
I'm just realizing that. We should. We've got one in a... Were you writing a book? Am I hallucinating about this? Were you writing a book at one time, or is this me just losing my mind again?
Yeah, but then I went out.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen. Oh, man. Speaking of going out, man, I went out with some friends yesterday for, you know, just a quick drink, and I wound up getting home 11 hours later, as one does. And it's weird because I actually, for the first time doing that, I actually didn't have that much to drink. I had six drinks over the course of the like 11 hours that I was out, plus you know, a pretty big meal. And I wound up with I ended with a 50-50 and then a Gibson at Alfred's, which was delightful. But
that's amazing. I love that you ended with those.
Yeah,
that kind of tells you what pace you were on. You know, like the.
Yeah, like it's just a very steady like 8 minute mile of drinking the entire time.
You but like Benjamin Buttoned your drinking session.
Exactly. Yeah, I started with a shot and a beer, and I ended there. No, but it's just like it makes me really curious. It's like what is the psychological thing that we do to ourselves when we lower our defenses and we say I'm going to go out for just one. Because no one has ever in the history of humankind done that successfully. And I'm just like, it made me very curious. Like there has to be, and it's not just me, like this is a running joke. And I was even supposed to catch up with a friend later on that night. And I told her, I was like, yeah, I'm going to go out and grab some happy hour drinks with some friends, but like just one or two. So I'll be around later on tonight. She's like, yeah, you're not going to make it. I was like, no, don't doubt me. I totally am. And I texted her at like 9:30 from like the third place we're at. I was like, yeah, I'm not going to make it. I'm sorry. I'll catch you tomorrow. But just like, why, what happens in our brains when we delude ourselves into thinking we're going out for just one? I don't know.
Well, it's the whole like, well, you know, you ended your night with a couple different martinis, you know, and that old saying, like, one's not enough. Wait, was it three's too many and one's not enough? Wait, what is it?
What's the saying? Like, one is not enough and three is too many or something like that. Or, I can't remember.
I always say that, you know, when it comes to martinis, I'm botching that saying. It's like, one is too many and three is not enough, I think is what the actual saying is. And I always say...
Yeah, that makes more sense.
One's not enough, and three is also not enough. But, you know, to me, especially now that, you know, like everything, like live out here in Northern California, everything's so spread out that, like, I can't just go have one. Two, I can easily say, yeah, I'm only going to have two. But, like, I don't want to take up a bar stool. Okay, think about this. You know, when we had Laura Newman on the show, like last year, and she was talking about training new bartenders.
Yeah.
And how much money it costs to actually train a new bartender. And she was talking about staff retention and how important it is to keep your staff on, because, you know, you put all that effort and the work in and the passion in with your staff. You want to make sure they're happy and like have benefits, and if you can, you know, and all these things. When I'm behind the bar, if I've got friends there and they're having a good time, I will just keep giving them, I'll give them drinks just so I don't have to clean the bar and reset it for the next people to come and sit down. Uh-huh. It's like, to me, so I don't want to do that to the bartenders. So, you know, I don't want them, it's like less work for them if I just stay there and drink. You know what I mean? Like,
no, totally. Yeah.
The weird and way also, of thinking about it, but.
Yeah. No, and like what you're saying about like how things are so spread out. Like I don't, you know, I live down in South Brooklyn now, so I'm not in the middle of nowhere, but I share a border with nowhere. And mm-hmm. like it is a trek to get into Midtown from where I am these days. And so when I'm there, it does feel like a bit of a waste to like go all that way and be like, well, I'll just have like a drink and then turn around and go back. So, and then of course, you know, as you said, one is too many, three is not enough. So then you're like, well, I'm already here. I might as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, I got to tell you, my thing lately has been, and it's like, not that the highball is anything new, but I've just been drinking dry vermouth highballs, which are delicious. It's like the new vodka soda. Not that I ever drink vodka sodas, but, you know, it's like, it's one of those things. It's like, it basically sobers you up. It's so like low ABV. But you know, there's so many good vermouths out there that, you know, and it's a respectable drink, you know, it's, you know, good vermouth, a little bit of seltzer water, nice garnish. I mean, come on, what's wrong with that? Then you can have more than one, you can have more than five and still be like good to drive a school bus, you know, but I don't know, man. Like, yeah, but going back to your point, like, yeah. Like, why would you go out for just one, especially in a place as magical as New York City?
I don't know, man. In the time before this, when I said I was going out for just one, I was going to McSorley's, where one drink is two drinks. So actually, already I was setting myself up for failure. So yeah. I don't know. I think we like to tell ourselves that, like, oh, you know, I'm going to go to the gym later. My friend who I was going out with is also, I was out with a couple other, like, you know, food and drinks writers and journalists last night. One of them was like, yeah, no, I literally like left the doc open on a story I was working on my computer. Be like, I'll come back to this when I get home at 8 p.m. I don't know. I think it's just, it's, there's something, maybe we like setting ourselves up to be a little bit bad. Like maybe there's something fun about like saying we're going to be good later and then like knowing in the back of our minds that we won't, and then getting to be like, well, I guess I'll just misbehave a little bit tonight. I guess I'll be a little bit naughty today. Like, I don't know. I think maybe that's part of it's a little trick we play on ourselves to our own surprise and delight. Maybe that's where it is.
It's a little mischievous. It's almost like, you know, making New Year's resolutions that you're going to break and you know you're never going to follow through on, at least not for a full year, but at least in a snackable amount of time. You can, it doesn't feel as like impactful if you break your resolution for the day for the night.
Exactly. And speaking of surprising and delighting and a little bit mischievous, we're very, very, I know. I worked on my segues last night while I was out. Segway, that was the one thing I told myself when I came home from the bars, I was going to work on my segues, and then I didn't, but I still managed to nail it. In the studio with us today, we have the one and only B. Bradsell coming to us live from London, and also of the Drinks Cabinet, which is based in my former hometown of Glasgow in Scotland. So, B, welcome. Thank you so much for coming.
Hi, guys. Thank you for having me. I do think that's one of the best intros I've ever had.
Surprising, delightful, and mischievous. You can put that on a business card. That's yours now.
For sure. I do need to get some new ones printed, so great.
The station's a 501c3 nonprofit, so like everything's free. Yeah, that's yours now.
and that was tax deductible for me to give that to you. So
yeah, exactly.
Everything works out. So B, I have to confess that it took me a while to put some pieces together about your background, because you were introduced to us by actually our guest last week, the one and only Chalky Tom, who is also delightful and mischievous. And she mentioned
and lives in London.
And lives in London, exactly. And she mentioned that your big sister was the espresso martini. And I just kind of was like, LOL, we all love espresso martinis. Isn't that funny? And it took me a little while of communicating with you to put together that and what your last name was and realize what she was talking about. So give us a little bit of your background, because you were sort of very much born into this industry. So talk a little bit about kind of growing up with that and then taking your place in where you are now.
I do feel that is slightly my fault. I am always the last person to say it. I'm terrible at doing the like, oh yeah, no, I'm here with the name, but I've just kind of gotten on with things and quietly in the background. My dad is a bartender called Dick Bradsell, known for such drinks as the espresso martini and the Bramble. So the espresso martini, that does make her my big sister. My dad didn't really know how to be around kids, but he did know how to train bartenders. So by accident, I've kind of been in the industry my whole life. I always said, instead of teaching me to do the dishes, he taught me how to speed polish. and, you know, not building a salad dressing, balancing a cocktail. It was always kind of, as soon as I started working in bars kind of full time, I realized how much I'd been in training my entire life. So I unofficially say I started at 6, which is when I started making cocktails at their house parties. Not tasting, just making. But but then I officially started with him when I was 13, and I bar backed for him for years and years on events before deciding that I was going to do something completely different, went off to university, and then graduated and realized that interning is horrible and I wanted to make money and work in a bar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fell in love and the rest is history. really. But that's been about, oh God. Oh no, I don't even want to think about that number. It's been a while. but it's been a really interesting time to get to see London's drinks cocktail world really adapt. You know, when I first graduated and really got started, there wasn't a cocktail bar on every corner. There were quite a lot of cocktail bars, but now in England, you literally cannot move for cocktail bars. Every pub, every bar, every restaurant is serving cocktails now, and it's just wonderful. And that definitely wasn't there when I started. And you know, it's a great industry that I've managed to travel the world with as well. My mom's American, so I can work in America. And I worked at the Dead Rabbit in their second year that they opened. So I started just after Bobby and Pam left. I think I crossed over with Pam a little bit, and then was there just as Jill started. So it was a great team to have.
Yeah.
And then sadly had to come home to come take care of my dad. But, you know, then got stuck back into the London bar scene. And since then, I've gotten the opportunity to travel around and talk about his drinks, talk about the drinks industry as a whole, kind of going anywhere anyone will have me, I'll always go. I just spent the last part of the year traveling to Dubai a lot, working with the team at Zuma, who are absolutely incredible, and working on their new espresso martini serve, which was great.
Nice. I mean, I was going to say that, like, your older sister's been getting around a lot lately, as it turns out. First of all, the espresso martini has been around a lot longer than most people realize. But, like, lately it's had this, like, huge resurgence. I mean, what do you think that is? Like, why?
Well, there are a few different ones, really. So, I mean, the original story, it was created in 1980-something. No one in the 80s seems to have any memory of when anything happened. In fact, yeah. Jake Berger has written a book about how if we can't remember when the espresso martini was made, how can we say that we know when the old-fashioned was? Right. Which, I mean, fair. But so it was the early 1980s. This is kind of, I'm early to mid is all I'll say.
And the then, late early 80s.
Yeah, that one. my dad had just had a new coffee machine, new espresso machine installed in his bar, which was called Soho Brasserie. And it was as if they'd had a new rotovap. No one knew how to use it. It was the fanciest of equipment. And the bar was an absolute state, completely covered in coffee. And then a young unnamed model, not Kate Moss or Naomi Campbell, came in and asked for a drink to wake her up and fuck her up. With a bar already covered in coffee was going in that drink. Vodka was the drink of the time, and kind of he shook that up together with some coffee liqueur, and thus the original drink was formed. I think it's about 1984, because he said that the David Bowie film Absolute Beginners was being filmed at the time, and that was released in 1985. So from that's my guessing at time. But then it kind of just disappeared into the background with him. He took it everywhere he went. That drink was actually originally served on the rocks. And then as the 90s trend for putting absolutely everything in a martini glass came along, he added it there. It became the espresso martini. His final recipe, he had it match bar, I think, in 1999. So it was one of the first match group drinks. He then took it to Damien Hirst's bar, where they were asked for a drink to wanted a pharmaceutical inspired menu for a bar called The Pharmacy, and my dad decided not to do that and just to give nice drinks new names. So it became the pharmaceutical stimulant, because people want to drink nice drinks. They don't want to drink, you know, medicinal ones, unless it's a good whiskey.
You're talking to the guy with a Fernet Branca tattoo, by the way.
Yeah. Like, there are a few things, but, like, as your average cocktail goes, sure. And especially for, you know, 1990s British drinking crowd, but then that was the original, and I think that it never really took off then. But then it kind of, low level just continued on menus, and then I think in Australia, where they are absolutely mad for coffee, it took over there. And then we were still kind of dealing with the bar that we were working in together, people loving the Brambles, and then we just get more and more people coming in asking about espresso martinis, normally Australians. I've had people being like, come in, like, flown all the way from Australia, come in on my dad's night off, and I'm like, sorry, I'm his daughter though, and they're just like, you know, wanting to like shake my hand just because I was related to him. That was kind of my first taste of like, oh my god, what am I getting into? And then things kind of, that we're getting more and more Australians come in, and then the thing that no one really wants to hear, but it is the truth, my dad died, and it was in his obituary, and everyone started putting drink specials on menus, and that's really how it took off in the UK. And that's, so it's like, it's not the funniest of answers, but it's true. That's what happened. And then I have no idea what happened in America, but just after COVID, just after COVID, it really just suddenly took off. And I really wasn't expecting it.
Yeah. I mean, I would say that it's partially due to the fact that, well, first of all, it's a delicious drink, but if you didn't have social stimulants, you needed some sort of stimulant, right? And espresso martini will surely do that. But it's also the way, like, the coffee culture in the United States is these days, it just makes a lot of sense. And I mean, I was a consultant for Stumptown Coffee for about a decade. And one of the things that I did was I trained all the bartenders or baristas. I trained them as bartenders using the Harry Johnson's Bartender's Guide for Hotels and Restaurants. Use that book as like the training manual, you know, this over 100-year-old book, just to teach baristas how to act and like bartenders. And their tips went up by like 500%. And it was a thing. And people started, this is like when people started making like espresso and tonic. And like there were certain bar elements that started moving back into the coffee shop and kind of vice versa. So I don't know. There's like, it's always kind of been there, but you know, as you said, you know, it just kind of passed. And I remember when your father died, and my bar was open for about a year or so, because it was like 2016, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it was about a year or so. And I remember we raised a glass for him, and I don't drink coffee. I haven't done it since we opened that bar, but we did make some espresso martinis. And I don't know, it's kind of interesting that you put it that way, that like with your father's passing, it's almost like the, you know, when a musician passes away, then everyone starts listening to that album, like that song and that album, you know, it becomes like a heavier rotation, right? And it kind of feels the same way with the espresso martini with your father.
I mean, yeah, that's definitely, it really does feel like, that's what happened. I have this weird thing. I think I'm the only person in the world when they're protecting a legacy, is that I try and take him down off a pedestal most of the time. I just like, I get all of these, you know, messages. We've got a thing called the London Bartenders Association, which is our like main Facebook group that everyone messages on. So you'll see people on there quite often, like just talking about this like amazing man and like all this crazy things, like, oh, a great man like Dick Bradsell wouldn't have called something as simple as the espresso martini, the pharmaceutical stimulant, is a far more fitting name for a man like him. And I'm like, I mean, he called it the vodka espresso, so but it's, you know, it's I find he was a very simple man. He came to work, he did his job, he liked to make the venue the absolute best he possibly could. And then he went home and had his mad home life where he was an artist who played Dungeons and Dragons. And it was like very separate. But I think that's what made him so interesting, because he was interested in the people that he was making drinks for. Like, it was always about the guests for him. There wasn't really an industry to get into. So I think that's kind of why his drinks have been so successful, is because he was making them for the guests, for guests, right, all over the world. There was, you know, it was always something that was in the zeitgeist that was pushing him forward. Sometimes it was a new ingredient. Sometimes it was just kind of the vague feel of what people were doing at the time. My favorite one of his drinks to talk about is the Russian Spring Punch, because it's just got the best story. No one ever wants to ever do it, because it's got one of the worst GP drinks in the world. It's, you know, mostly champagne and vodka and fresh ingredients. It's just, it's a bit of a pain. Anything that has 150 mils of champagne is a topper. It's not fun. I don't get to talk about it as much as I'd like, but it was created for a house party, and it was when him and his friends were in their 20s, and some of them had found their new careers and were making some good money. Some of them were still finding themselves and really struggling and, you know, still just working kind of their simpler jobs, their minimum wage jobs. And everyone was kind of stopping hanging out together because everyone wanted to do their own thing and live within their means. And one of his friends was just like, I just want all of my friends at a party. Can you help me with this? So what they decided was to do was to make a punch bowl that had kind of the base ingredients, and then everyone bought their own bottle of fizz. And if you were doing well and you wanted to bring your bottle of Bollinger, you could. Or if you wanted to go to the supermarket and buy the cheapest bottle of fizz you could also come and you'd still get a delicious drink. And that's where the Russian Spring Punch came from. And I just, like, that was how my dad kind of thought about drinks. And I just, like, it's creating drinks for people. And so, like, the drink is, like, the center of the party. And that's really how he used to think about them.
That's really, that's a really sweet story.
Like, I love talking about it. Yeah.
It's beautiful. And especially because, like, I'm sure that it wasn't just like everyone's got their own bottle. I'm sure that people were kind of sharing those bottles too, right? I mean, like, just because with the idea of a punch being a very communal drinking style. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. I love that. I mean, I'm sure that, like, I don't know. I'm just thinking, I'm hearing it for the first time now, so sorry. I'm sure that really brought that crew back together in a really profound way too. It's like, I love that story. Wow. Good job, Jake.
I mean, they are all still friends. My mom still sees all of those people on a regular basis. I think she's living with my godfather who was at that party right now.
Oh my God. So cool. Well, hey, let's take a quick break. We're going to have to, this a quick one so we get back, because this is really fun talking with you, B. We want to hear from our sponsors, and then we'll continue talking with B. Bradsell on the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. Back in a few.
Every glass of wine tells a story. And these stories reveal hidden histories, flavors, passions, and sometimes they unravel our darkest desires. In Wine Enthusiast's newest podcast, Vinfamous, journalist Ashley Smith dissects the underbelly of the wine world. We hear from the people who know what it means when the product of love and care becomes the source of greed, arson, even murder. Each episode takes listeners into the mysterious and historic world of winemaking and the crimes that have since become, well, vinfamous. This podcast pairs well with wine lovers, history nerds, and crime junkies. So grab a glass of your favorite and follow the podcast to join as we delve into the twists and turns behind the all-time most shocking wine crimes. Follow Vinfamous on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and be sure to follow the show so you never miss a scandal. New episodes drop every other Wednesday. Cheers.
This episode is brought to you by Cheese State University. Cheese State University was created for dedicated cheese professionals seeking to deepen their knowledge, sharpen their skills, and build connections.
It feels like a gift to be able to give this gift to people, because I know that from my own experiences, I know how valuable, consolidated, incredible training resources are.
They offer an in-depth education on all things cheese, as well as an active network for peer support and career development.
You can pop over to the Quad, which is our social networking and engagement app. And so that's a really fun and dynamic aspect of Cheese State University.
Cheese State's three-part course is designed for seasoned pros and entry-level mongers alike, and covers all the skills one needs to perform on the cheese counter.
The structure of Cheese State University is all based on the Cheese State University Field Guide. And that is a three-volume resource. It's all digital, online.
At the end of the course, students will be ready to ace the field guide assessment and earn their Cheese State Scholar Certificate.
Another resource is a video series where we tackle sort of like these thornier questions that you can get on the cheese counter, like, what is rennet? And like, why is this cheese so expensive? And can pregnant people even eat cheese?
At Cheese State, you're among experts, you're among scholars, you're among cheese lovers, and most importantly, you are a monger. Join them in the Ivy League of Cheese Education at cheesestateuniversity.com.
And we are back. You're listening to the Speakeasy on Heritage Radio Network. And in the studio today, we have, all the way from London, B. Bradsell. We were talking in the first part of the show about your father's legacy, Dick Bradsell. We talked about the espresso martini, but what kind of caught me in that first part of the show is that you said that it started out in the 80s as a drink that was built on ice. But the way we think about the espresso martini, like the finished kind of like what it is now and like all the variations, you know, that of this kind of iconic drink now, it started as something that was just vodka and a coffee liqueur and a shot of espresso on the rocks. Like that, you know, predates everything being served in a martini glass. and then later on a coupe glass. But I just love that because it's straight to the fucking point. It's like, all right, yep. Wake me up and fuck me up. All right, sure. Here you go. Here's some vodka. Here's some coffee liqueur. Here's a shot of espresso. And it's kind of interesting to think about that even in the realm of like, it's kind of like a white Russian, but instead of the cream, you just threw a shot of espresso on top instead, which I love that idea. And I think it's interesting when we go back and we think about drinks like the Negroni and the Martini and like, you know, those weren't original drinks. You know, they started somewhere and then became that drink. And this one started there. And I don't know, it's just, like, I guess we never really think about, you know, when we think about like coffee culture and like espresso machines, like, you know, that's a very European thing. I mean, it's not something that we really, when you said that about this new thing in the bar, having an espresso machine, almost being like a rotovap, you know, it kind of reminds me of like the same thing that was going on in, was it 1985 when Absolut Citron came out? And then it was like, everyone started kind of like, they're like, what do we do with it? And so the first thing that they, it's like, okay, let's make a kamikaze with it. All right, let's like throw some cranberry juice in it. Then you got a Cosmo. You know, it's like there was, we don't think about oftentimes we romanticize these different eras of cocktail invention, you know, like the late 19th century, American Prohibition, even like the mid 20th century, with like martinis and that whole culture and everything. But there's some cool stuff happening in the 80s.
There was some really cool stuff happening in the 80s. And I mean, shameless plug here, but in our book that we released last year with Mixlinney, Dicktails, that's kind of a lot of what it's talking about. It's split into different eras and kind of what dad saw going on at the time. And it really was this idea of like all these new products were coming out. So he just had this opportunity just to be so creative. I mean, he remembered fresh juices becoming a thing. You remember cranberry juice being brought to the UK for the first time. These are all brand new things. And it really did let them be as creative as they wanted. I mean, they had, you know, the classic hotel cocktail books. And I mean, the fine art of mixing drinks was the Bible in my household. I grew up with, I mean, I had the fine art of mixing drinks before I had a Bible. And my dad was absolutely obsessed with the book, thought nothing could be better. So it took him a really long time to kind of put the idea for what he wanted to do together. And so we made it a book of stories with drinks recipes as well, but mostly about the stories of the time and kind of what was happening creatively, what they were seeing, what was kind of spurring them on. Because I think especially when you looking at these drinks and trying to put them into context, I think that gets lost a little bit, especially for newer bartenders who don't really understand that the cocktail culture that we have now just didn't exist that long ago.
Right.
I always feel like I'm sounding like I'm an 84-year-old woman when I talk about what I started. Yeah.
You're in the right place.
Yeah. I was just like, you know, it was only 20 years ago that I was starting and there just wasn't any of this. Like you did still have to go to quite nice bars to get cocktails. But it had a lot of that culture of invention and, you know, all these new products. That's the Bramble cocktail was created because a new creme de mule came to the market and dad had his Madeleine moment transported back to his childhood on the Isle of Wight picking blackberries. And that's kind of where that drink came from. So there are a few things that he created for certain products. And that was one of the things that was brilliant about him is he had this kind of, I don't know, it's, I could just imagine it in my head of like, you know, one of those memes with people doing the maths in their head. The minute he tastes something, just the drink came alive and he could just do it all in his head. And then he would make a perfect drink first off. Like it would always be drinkable, but then he'd work on it. He'd develop it. But even like the base one would still be very good.
Yeah. Well, but you said something actually earlier about the fact that he was all about the guest experience. And the cool thing about that is like this, you know, speaking of the different eras, like there wasn't a lot of press happening for mixology during this time, right? It wasn't really like bartenders weren't really driven in that way to like become like internet famous or whatever, because there was no internet, right? So like all these drinks that were being invented, it was really for the guest experience. And I think that's a really important thing for, as you said, like for a lot of the new bartenders, that they're, you know, there's so it's the industry is saturated in the best way with new talent and a lot of new people, but like they're, you know, you've got to, you know, go back to the basics and understand that it's about the guest experience first. Right. And I think that's what that Dick did. And it's proven itself to be successful. Yeah.
I mean, that absolutely was kind of the core of what he believed in, was definitely, you know, the drinks were one part, but having a good front of house person, very important to him. So I wasn't actually really behind the bar. I was allowed to do bars like a couple of days a week, but he was like, no, you're going to be trained as a manager. You're going to be trained as front of house. You can talk to people. So that's what you're going to be doing, because not everyone is good at this. And he actually believed it was harder to find good front of house people that were truly good at it than bartenders, because everyone wants to get behind the bar. And there's, you know, we don't really have maitre d's here as much as you do in America, or, you know, other parts of the world. But managers are quite often the people kind of hosting. But, you know, a strong front of house team is getting rarer and rarer, because we've now got this thing where the whole bar team rotate everything, which I think is good. And it can, you know, it can, if you it's treated well, the whole team can become stronger and the whole team become strong on the bar and the floor. But if it's not I've found it a few times where I've kind of tried to manage it and I've had to like fight this idea that like, oh, I'm just on a floor shift today. It's like, no, you're like, you're doing a completely different guest experience. It is very important. Right. And it is almost just as important. But I mean, for my dad, like hiring a DJ was more important to him than hiring his new junior bartender. He's like, I can train the bartender, I cannot train the DJ to have natural talent.
Yeah, no, it's the thing that I always say. It's like, you can teach anybody anything except to give a shit, you know? Like, you can teach anybody any skill. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, there is also something to be said for, you know, natural talent. I'm sure I could become a mediocre DJ with lots of training, but, you know, it would be probably a lot more work than any bar manager would want to put in. But this, you know, this makes me think of kind of what you're up to now, B, with your company, The Drinks Cabinet, because, you know, I've loved looking over like some of your work and some of the experiences you've created, some of the products you've done, some of the photo shoots that you've done for various drinks on your website, and just the amount of attention to detail to a holistic experience that you all put in. So would you tell us just a little bit about how you came to be there and sort of what the overarching, you know, philosophy of it is and how you execute it?
So The Drinks Cabinet is my company. I'm the entree director for The Drink Cabinet. I absolutely adore it. It's kind of a job that found me kind of accidentally. So the company's existed for about 10 years. And then I was doing some freelancing bits for them for like judging competitions and things. And then over COVID, I found myself without a job, trying to apply for non-industry things and absolutely hating it. And then the director, Lauren, came to town and was just like, do you want to go for a martini? And I'm like, absolutely, of course. And kind of after a couple of hours of conversation, and bemoaning how much I actually secretly hated freelancing, I get a call 3 days later saying, do you want a job? Absolutely. She's like, don't worry, you don't have to move to Scotland. We need a London office. We want to be over the whole country, so that's fine. We do work all over the whole country. But it's something I hadn't really thought of doing before, as being part of a creative agency. And it's one of the most fun jobs I've ever had in my life. And I really kind of encouraging anyone that kind of thinks service maybe not their what they want to do day to day anymore, but still don't want to completely pull out of it. It's kind of perfect for that. So I always put it that I have a different job every day. We are kind of a one-stop agency. We do everything from live events to training programs to drink strategies to POS. I mean, we even have a logistics arm now. We do kind of a little bit of everything. And, you know, in two days, I'm going to be working a trade show. Today, I was working on a new tasting plan for another brand. I've got, you know, some of my team are running a product launch for a distillery in one part of the country. I've got other ones collecting a chair from one venue and shipping it to another. Like, it's, you know, we do a little bit of everything. And it's really just, I still get to stretch my bartending legs. I still get to kind of develop drinks whenever I, like, all the time. I get to make at least two or I think I'm doing more drinks creation now than I kind of was when I was in a bar, because it's not just seasonal menus. It's a daily thing, and it's so great to be able to do that. And then I'm getting to write training programs and kind of really helping brands get their voice across. But one of the things that's really important to us is every single person that works at the Drink Cabinet has worked in hospitality at some point, because we have this kind of ease that everyone just kind of gets it. Like, we're never going to put forward, when we're putting, you know, ideas together for a new training program or POS, we're never going to put something forward that won't work, that some bartender's going to get annoyed and be like, I didn't need another bar spoon. Like, I've got 50 of those. I don't need another t-shirt. I want, you know, this is what will actually help us. So that's where we're thinking when we come to it, which is great. And then we've also just got that kind of inbuilt hospitality drive on event days that we can just get things done. And, you know, we know that we're there till the bitter end, and the ability just to pivot when you need to, because whatever will go, you know, whatever you haven't prepared for will be the thing that goes wrong. And that kind of mindset. So we're all very good at pivoting. And it just means that we're kind of, it's a great team to work with, because I know I've just got this like trust that things will be okay with my team, which is lovely.
Yeah. Agile.
I love that, because I've been thinking a lot recently about, because, you know, my I've been a freelancer since March 15th, 2020. I'm just kind of working here and there, and work's been a little bit slow lately. And it kind of gives you a chance to, you know, gaze deep into your belly button and think, okay, you know, what have I loved from the jobs that I've had? What do I want to really move towards in the future? And yeah, I was thinking I missed that, like, you know, in the sort of, you know, work from home freelancer life, I've missed that unpredictability. Like, there's something I think that is very attractive to a certain type of person that gravitates towards this line of work, where we love that lack of certainty that I think would be terrifying for a lot of, I'm going to go out on a limb here and say, most other people. Like, there's just something that's very nice about, you know, you're doing something different every day and you never know what's going to come next. Like, I think there's a certain part of my brain, and I'm willing to bet a decent sum of money, yours be, and yours, Damon, that really kind of thrives on that, you know, I don't know what today is going to be like, and I love that thing.
That's absolutely it for me. I adore that. That's most what I want to be doing kind of every day of my life, is I'll sit down and look at my tasks for the day. I'm like, that is just so not what I expected, but great. Fantastic. you know, I've suddenly got like, okay, we actually need you in Scotland in 2 days because you've got to do this in X thing or Y thing. And I'm like, okay.
There's this really important chair we need you to grab. Yeah. It's in an ancient tomb.
Oh, you know what? I haven't. There's been.
Oh, I really want to know why. I loved saying ancient tomb and hearing you be like, this reminds me of another fun story. Okay, go. I'm so excited.
It's not that, but like working in Scotland and doing kind of fun kind of activations and things, you know, we've done back of beyond to put tents and yurts in the sand on islands, you know, gone to an island to put up a bar and tent, and suddenly, oh, the sea is where we were meant to put the bar down.
good old Scotland.
You know, suddenly having to get the farmers to rake the sand to get us a path so we can find a new place. that kind of level of unpredictability that I absolutely adore. But as you mentioned earlier, the photos we get to do as well, which I love being able to kind of really work with drinks photography as well. It's something I had a bit of experience with in the past, but we get to do a lot more of it now. We have our own studio in-house, so we do everything in-house. We have our own photographers, we have our own studio. And so I think the photos that you were talking about on our website, that was a project that we got to do over COVID. One of the things that my partner Lauren, she's very good at doubling down on is, we'll just work harder and everything's going to be okay. During COVID, we were like, we will not be resting on laurels. In the UK, we had a thing called furlough. So you basically, companies got to pay their staff to not work. And Lauren's like, we're not going to do that. We're going to work through it. We're going to keep going. So we did lots of kind of fun internal projects. And we basically spent a couple of weeks putting together, like, what photo shoots do we want to learn how to do? What do we want to stretch our legs and have more fun doing? Because this is the time to learn. So that's what we got to do. We'd made a calendar. That was our client gift of the year. And we got to basically put our dream photo shoots together and really get creative with it and kind of work out different camera tricks that we wanted to do, develop the drinks all ourselves, and really kind of each drink we did a year of blog posts that went around the drinks seasonally as well, working with different kind of events throughout the year. And it was such a fun project to get to do. And it's really got on to then. So our team, whenever we've got kind of new client projects coming in, we have stretched those muscles. We know what we're doing. And we know that we can do it together, which is great.
I love that. And honestly, a lot of the time, you know, I mean, you were talking about how now there's a cocktail bar on just about every corner of any major city that you travel to. And it's part of me worries a little bit that, like, we've reached a saturation point, you know, that we've reached a point where, you know, maybe there's only so many novel ideas out there that people can put forward before eventually you're like, this Negroni riff is really just a Negroni. It's a good Negroni, but it's just a Negroni, and I just paid $19 for it, you know? And I feel the same with, there are just so many drinks photo shoots everywhere. But it was really nice to see the creativity. Like, I don't remember being blown away by a picture of a drink like I was with some of the ones, and the depth of thought that you put into it, and just you could tell how much fun you were having making these things on your website. We'll put a link in the show notes so that, you know, because podcasting is not a visual medium, and people are listening to me talk about pictures out there for a little while, so you can see them for yourself. But there is something cool about being reminded every now and again for a thing that you've been steeped in for most of your professional life, that there is still stuff out there that can really, really impress you. I think that's really fun.
Thank you. That's so lovely to hear. That was, it was definitely, I want to say labor of love, but it wasn't even a labor. We had so much fun doing it because, yeah, we were getting to be creative. And it's also good to be able to share it on our social media, because there's we do a lot of projects under it. NDA, which is, you know, a big part of working in an agency, so we don't get to often share the photos that we do as much as we'd like. So it was great to be able to share those. But we've got, and, you know, sometimes we'll do a shoot and it doesn't get released for 6 months to a year. So it was great to have the immediacy of it as well, and now it lives on our website very happily. There's definitely working in a creative agency. I think for anyone that's kind of, you know, maybe not, as I said before, not 100% wanting to be in service all the time anymore, but still loving the industry, but wanting to stretch their legs elsewhere, I think is such a great thing to get into. You know, you don't necessarily need to have a huge marketing background. As long as you've got an interest in it and kind of take note, you can really kind of get into things. You can start doing event side and then move into more of the marketing. That's kind of what we do a lot of, kind of training people up to get into the other side. And then, you know, one of our main things is all of our team get poached, which I think we've got to take as a compliment.
Amazing. Oh man, yeah. B, this has been so much fun chatting today. I wish we had more time, but we're kind of at the end of the hour. Can we give out your where can people find you?
So, I mean, I'm on Instagram as B Bradsell, just the letter B and then Bradsell. And then the drink cabinet is, or it's the drink cabinet, no S, .co.uk. And that's our website. And then it's the drink cabinet _UK on Instagram. And then I am kind of up and around in any trade show in the UK. I'll normally be there. Or, you know, I try and getting about and doing more international bits whenever I can as well. So I will be at Chockey's event next week on Little Red Door.
Oh, cool. Yeah. Very cool. My coworker will be there as well. He's going to be in Paris. So yeah, very cool. And that's going to be a great event. I can't wait to hear about how that goes. So yeah, definitely have a blast at that. And well, it's been a blast here today too. So we're just always having a good time. You know, that's kind of what you were talking about. Yeah, I say this a lot. You know, there's a lot more than one way to work in this industry besides just being behind the bar. And you are a shining example of that. And really, it's really inspirational to talk to someone like you who's like found all these different ways to do the things in this industry that are so much fun. It's a wonderful industry to work in, and there's a lot of ways to do it. And so, yeah, thank you for being here and talking to us about it today.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for such a lovely afternoon.
Absolutely. Well, morning for me. but the difference between you being there at 5 o'clock and me being here at 9 a.m. It's like whatever. We can still have a drink.
We're both on the whiskey.
Well, this has been so much fun. Thanks again, B, for being on the show, and thank you everyone who listens out there. We've been getting a lot of really great comments recently. For people who listen to the show, I know we don't really talk about that very often, but we always love to hear from you. And so a lot of people will send me emails and texts and direct messages. And it's just really nice to hear from the people who are listening to the show. It makes us feel like we're actually doing something and people who are listening, which is really great. So thank you to all of our listeners out there. And thanks to Armin, our producer and engineer today. And thank you to everyone at Heritage Radio Network. And until next week, this has been the Speakeasy. Be safe, have fun. Cheers.
Cheers.
So you don't shun the devil with your rock.
The Speakeasy is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food and drink radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.